The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Deborah Pierre-Lewis, IT Security Policy, Liaison and Training, Bureau of Information Resource Management at the Department of State. Well, how are you today, Deborah?
I am doing wonderful today, John. How are you?
I was at a little conference and I sat next to Deborah and I spoke and I said, that is a radio voice you have there, Deborah. We're going to have to get you in the studio. You'll probably take over my job. Wow. This is this perfect melodic voice. Where were you born and raised? I mean, were you born in like radio heaven or something? Tell me your background.
Well, thank you very much. I was born in California, Southern California to be exact. It's interesting you say that. I've always been told I have that, for my time, my generation, it was the Valley Girl voice. And so I've worked so hard to calm that down a bit. So I went to school in the Midwest.
Nebraska. So you got some of that washed out of you there. But that's right here. I hear straight Midwest. Wow.
Yes. But no, I'm definitely a Cali girl.
Wow.
Born and raised.
Wow. So tell us more about your background. So California, Midwest. What did you study in the Midwest?
Studied the Midwest was computer science and mathematics. I'm a math nerd by trade. Computer science, I just kind of fell into. It was something that was, it made sense to me. It's logical. So it flows.
Makes sense.
Yes.
And I looked you up on LinkedIn. You know, you're a pretty young person, but you're almost like Forrest Gump. I mean, Navy, Army, Justice, I mean, all kinds of places. Just give a few of the organizations you've worked with. I know, start off with the Navy, is that right?
Well, yes. I was actually Department of the Navy as a Marine. So I was in the Marine Corps for about 7 years. And then from there, I started my federal career at the Navy Academy, which was a great opportunity, and went on to the Department of Justice. For a short time, managing a case management system, and then Department of Homeland Security with the Coast Guard, and then I joined the Army as a civilian. So all these are civilian positions. From there, I ended up at the State Department. I am a career federal servant. I'm one of those folks that believe this is the taxpayers' government, and I strive to make every department and agency the best program, the best organization that I can.
I scrutinized your background. I was looking for Columbia School of Broadcasting, and I couldn't find it anywhere in there.
No, my first time on radio, be gentle. I'm a little nervous.
Seriously, we were at an event with a bunch of security folks, and there were some topics that were being discussed, and I thought you had good insight. And I thought, well, here we have a person here who maybe can bring in a perspective on cybersecurity from the Department of State that may be different. Now, this is not your first time at the rodeo, so you've seen in many different areas, and so you can look at your experience in the State Department and maybe share with our listeners, give them a bone, make sure they don't call suicide hotline, or maybe help them out with some of these things you've seen in all your different activities. And because the Department of State is a whole separate, different beast from most state agencies, aren't they?
Yes, the Department of State is. You know, it's an amazing department. You know, our foreign service cadre, you know, God bless them. Coming from a military background, we go into country and it's a different mindset than when they go into country. Also, they're on every continent, you know, so they're pretty much everywhere, and they're working with the local people. So they're hands on. And
so you have a situation where you have people in hundreds of countries, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's Christmas here in the United States. It doesn't mean it's Christmas over in Brazil or who knows where. And so you have, I think the threat landscape you see is going to be a lot different than just maybe a domestic agency.
Well, yes. And also the word threat landscape is interesting because it's to have that posture is a little difficult in that type of environment. You know, you must always be warm and open. The mission of the State Department is diplomacy. You know, we're there as diplomats, and so having the thought or the mental model, if you will, of a threat picture makes it very difficult to carry out that mission.
So, being the director of IC Security Policy, Liaison, tell us what your day-to-day job is and what kind of challenges you have in your job.
Well, day to day, the most important job I have is actually I find to be the liaison piece. I think the work that my office does is I call it the BASF. You know, we don't actually perform all the operations. We're there to make the operations work through our policy, through our liaison with DHS, with our partners in the government, as well as the private industry and within our bureau, and as well as providing training opportunities and courses.
3 years ago, I was at a little workshop at the Department of State, and they were like so far advanced when it comes to mobile and mobile payments and mobile capabilities, because many of the State Department folks are in the middle of Africa where was no wires. And
yes.
So wireless is normal, and they bring this information back to the United States. And this is maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and people go, oh, what do you mean pay stuff with a phone? But I think the State Department is almost at the leading edge of a lot of these technologies.
Oh, yes. The State Department, I enjoy working there. It's the MacGyver of technology. You really do have to have a special skill set and a special thought process in order to be successful in the culture and to be a value to the mission and to provide technology solutions. Thinking outside the box is very important, and that's to me one of the core competencies there.
When we were in the green room earlier, I mentioned it was my son's birthday yesterday, and so we had a little birthday festivity for him. And we've got another birthday here, too. This birthday coming up is the OPM breach.
Yes.
And so probably keeps you up at night, and maybe you call suicide hotline when everyone mentions OPM breach. Tell us about the OPM breach and what kind of impact that has on you and your team's ability to maybe detect and investigate attacks.
Well, one of the things people focused on is how could this have happened and why did this happen? And a lot of times when that sets in, we tend to want to go back and break apart everything that was being built, and that's not always the right thing to do. A lot of times it's a time to settle down and build your relationships, build the things that you should be doing every day. The basics, and so make sure those basic works that you're supposed to be doing are being performed, as well as the relationships that you have are getting you to where you need to be protected. And I think the OPM hack reminded us of that, that we do need to make sure we're partnering up and we don't hold close what's going on, but we ask, hey, what are they doing over there? How are they successful, and how can we bring in that talent here?
In my world, I'll go into a small company and I'll do a gap analysis of their marketing for technology products. And I think if you look at OPM, you can say, well, that's a good case study for gap analysis, isn't it? There's some processes and people that maybe didn't do all the checklists properly. Is that how you look at that as a learning point for you?
Well, not necessarily not doing it properly. There's always more you can do. It's so easy for people that are not in the situation to Monday morning quarterback it, right? To say, if I was there, I would have done this. But at the end of the day, it's to look back and say, what more can I do now? Because at the end of the day, you can, I'm looking out your studio and I see these cars there. You can have your doors locked all you want. If somebody wants to get in, they're going to get in. And you have to figure out, well, do I still park on that street? Do I park somewhere else? Well, do I even have a car? And something that we don't always talk about, it's the risk that you take. With every control, with every protection mechanism you put in place, it's a risk. And you make that decision. And it's something that when things like the OPM hack happen, we don't take time to discuss. And I think a lot of that is something that we do need to get to at some point.
When I have different people in the studio. For example, I had the folks from Mach 37 in the studio. This is an innovation hub in Dulles. It's for cybersecurity. And one of the women out there, she's coming up with a product that works for cybersecurity for automobiles. It's like, well, you're a little ahead of the curve here, aren't you? And brilliant young lady, and needs some marketing help, but she's got it down. She says, look, this is going to happen. Old Deborah here is going to be driving to work one day, and someone's going to hack her car. And so she's going to be ahead of it. And so what do you see as far as current services and maybe certain tools that are just on the horizon? I was amazed at that.
Well, outside the government space, I'll take a step outside of there. Did you see the new Chevy commercials? you know, with all the technology and the automobiles. I mean, that's very impressive. But I do want to pull that back. You know, we've moved on from Moore's Law, you know, where technology was changing every 3 years, and now it changes every year. And we're getting to a point where the focus needs to be on the people. How do us humans keep up with the technology?
Yeah, and we have a little focus on our sponsors. So we're going to take a break and come back and talk more about Department of State and IT security, best practices, some of the challenges and struggles you see, and maybe can assist our listeners with some guidelines and what they can do.
Okay.
You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Deborah Pierluis, IT Security Policy Liaison and Training, Bureau of Information Resource Management, Department of State. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Deborah Pierluis. She's Director, IT Security Policy Liaison and Training, Bureau of Information Resource Management at the Department of State. In the first block, we talked in general about some practices, and usually when it comes to IT security, people toss out people, process, technology, and you know, we know about the technology changing all the time, and people are constantly training, but sometimes this process thing is the hang-up. Now, yesterday, I was sending out some email, and I was listening to the Jupiter Symphony by this guy named Mozart, you know, I don't know how this guy did it. This guy died at like 35. He just was hitting home runs. At age 6, he was writing symphonies. So I don't know how he had all those different people come together and at the same time. And I think that's your challenge, is getting all these different people to come together. You may know best practices. You may be very well aware of different threats that are out there. But to coordinate that and train other people, that may be more of the challenge than knowing the threats.
You know, one of the things I like to say is the inch wide, you know, Missouri River. Sorry about that. I mixed that up. Actually it's a mile wide and an inch deep. You know, it's important to expose yourself to different technologies and think outside the box. And that helps you work with the different professions. 5-10 years ago, information technology, IT security, cybersecurity was done in a vacuum. And many people were either afraid of it, unaware of it, and it was the boogeyman that was in the room. And now that's changed. I mean, all of us, we're carrying all of these tools in our pockets. In many cases, we're carrying more than one of them. And so it's now on the forefront of our daily lives. So when it comes to work, you know, the being able to relate the technologies, tools, and the processes that are needed to move an organization forward, it's actually easier, you know, now, because everyone has the technology. I think the challenge is the speed at which everyone wants things to move. You know, the Apple updates come out really fast, and the technologies from the Androids, you know, the phones, they update really fast. We're looking at the T-Mobile and all these commercials, and things are just moving really fast. And people are like, well, why can't it move as fast as at work? You know, why can't I have this update as fast? And we've got a lot of other things going on. And so I think that's something that, you know, really needs to be focused on.
In fact, at the little discussion we were at, it was a couple months back with a lot of anonymous people. Well, one anonymous person in the room said, well, you know, he's got enough budget. Budget for him wasn't a problem. Well, the problem with him was convincing people to take action on the recommendations that he said. I mean, this was a breakthrough for me. So that's kind of interesting to find that out. But there was a wide range of opinion in that room. Some agencies maybe don't have the budget. Some do. Some have obstacles. Some are limited by some constraints that other agencies aren't. And, you know, I'd like to say the broad brushstroke is that, oh, yeah, Tony Scott says we could do this, and everyone marches in line. We know it. Tony's got to get out and get in the field and get frustrated a few times, but it's always a challenge in that area, especially with having everything together. What about traffic on the network? We have a lot of people talk. In fact, this is kind of a hot topic in the last few months, is that and so Apple refused to play the game of the federal government. The government got around with encryption. I think what this encryption thing is bringing it in front, and people in the business like you are starting to think about encryption and network traffic and encrypted network traffic. Is this high in your list of concerns, low in your list? Where's it rate in your list of concerns?
It's midpoint, and I'm not sure if I'm online with my peers, but from a technology perspective, it's already there. You know, we're already doing that work, but the gap is the people that's needed. We're so focused on the technology that we haven't revamped our workforce and our people that are actually providing the support to these technologies as well as helping us mitigate them. And so we've got to work to close those gaps.
And I think that's so important, and that's why I brought up this woman out at Mach 36 to talk about automobile. I had another guest in the studio here. There's another woman, a female entrepreneur, and what she would do is people would get mobile devices, and they would get software that would protect their mobile devices, and she would do penetration tests on the software that they would use. I said, well, there's a perspective there. And so maybe this is woman taking it from a – well, I never – yeah, well, I'll make a sexist statement. Maybe a man has a certain way of structuring things and it gets broken into, but maybe they have a different approach. And so I think that's so important in your world is that, well, I never thought of someone would go in through a medical device or something. It's what you know is you don't know half the things that are going to happen in the future, do you?
Well, no. And one thing to think about is, wherever you're working in, you're expected to be the all-knowing and all-seeing of that. But there are other things that are coming at you and other things that you're working with and working around that require your attention at times and your respect. So how do you pay attention to that and shape what it is you're doing? And I think that goes to finding different ways to work things, finding different ways to use things to make them better. I think approaching anything, whether it be technology or process, with the thought of making it better, and it takes courage. You've got to think outside the box. You might do things that you're not comfortable with, or are not popular, or people are saying, well, that's not how we do it here, and you just keep pressing ahead and see where that takes you.
I was at Metro Center this morning. It was kind of cool outside and warm in Metro Center. And I looked up and there's this huge big banner. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's the AWS banner, Amazon Web Services. Mm-hmm. They're coming in town. Every year they come in town. And 5 years ago, it was small, bigger and bigger and bigger. And they're going to be, I think, in the last week in June over at the convention center with a big deal. I'm going down there. The point is cloud.
Yes.
And we see Tony Scott yelling and screaming and pounding and saying, "Gotta move to the cloud, move to the cloud." Petara score is based on how many apps move to the cloud. Well, how does this impact your job?
Well, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, cloud for the department is a beautiful thing, but at the same time, there are things that we want to watch out for. The laws that protect consumer data within this country may not be the same as others, and so we have to have a healthy respect for that. But at the same time, we're located at over 280 posts worldwide. So how do we get data and information, to those posts, and how do we conduct our mission? So with that said, it's a balancing act there. It's going back to what I said earlier about risk. Being able to pull this data together and get the business need and talk about what is needed, and as well as, what's the impact of what's the cost of doing business, I think is a simple way of saying it. In non-technical terms, we have that down. What's the cost of leaving your car door open? But we don't have we don't have that same thought a lot of times when it comes to technology. And so that's kind of where we need to be. So that way, if something does happen, you can say, "Hey, we did what we could, but we knew this was possible. So now we need to decide: do we continue moving on from here, or do we change the way we're doing our business?"
Earlier, you mentioned updates in Apple, and there are software packages out there that will automatically update this and that. And I kind of made a mental note to that. And then when you said 280, I said 280. You've got 280 physical locations all around the world, operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I mean, I don't know. I've been in a lot of different countries, and I'll tell you, there's different flavors and methods and techniques and power systems that go down and don't go down, and secure, insecure, and relationships with security people that are loose and not loose. And I don't know how you can automate 280. It seems like you have to have some human beings in there, some practical human beings saying, "Okay, we can't automate this stuff in country X because of this one, because of power going out."
Yes. Again, that goes to respecting your location and where you're at in order to operate. You must definitely be a conductor of a beautiful orchestra, you know, to be able to manage that. You've got so many things going on and so many people. So keeping people motivated, as well as one of the things we didn't talk about were the customers. You know, who are your customers that you're supporting at all those different posts and locations? What are the chances that they have the same needs? Probably none. And so meeting that is also something that's critical.
So it's a judicious use of automation can help your job, but you have to keep that at arm's length and realize that there's limitations to some automated processes.
Yes, there are.
That's the key.
Yeah. There is.
Let's take a break and come back. I want to ask about this concept of normalized data and data coming in from IoT and all kinds of different devices out there. It's incredible. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Deborah Pierluis, Director of IT Security Policy, Liaison and Training, Bureau of Information Resource Management, Department of State. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Deborah Pierluis, Director of IT Security Policy, Liaison and Training, Bureau of Information Resource Management, Department of State. We've been bouncing around general topics about cybersecurity and some of the challenges inherent in the Department of State. 280 locations, and Deborah's got to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because something can happen anywhere. It's just it's a whole lot to worry about. So, Deborah, people are listening to this interview going, now, what the heck does she read? I mean, how does she keep up with this? Is it just she listen to podcasts on the way into work? Does she like IV stuff? I mean, Mountain Dew? So what stuff do you read to keep up with all these changes?
Well, I wasn't sure if I was going to admit this or not, but I'm one of those lurkers on Twitter. So I subscribe to, you know, a few things, and as they pop up, I read the articles. So that's one way. Fed Weekly, Government Executive, obviously, because I'm a federal employee. So a lot of the anything that's going on that's going to affect the federal government, you know, I'm subscribing to and trying to keep up with, as well as now that I'm with the State Department, or I've been with the State Department for now for the past 4 years, anything affecting public diplomacy or happening overseas, you know, anything that's happening hotspot wise. And then being in information technology, it's, you know, one of the things is you could read everything and still not have enough information. And so, I tend to stick to the blogs and the podcast feeds, and I love TED Talks.
So when you interview someone for a job and someone waltzes in and says, well, I've got this certificate and that certificate and this certificate, and does that impress you? Is that important for you? Continuous training I don't want to say that. Of course, continuous training is important, but what is the value of these courses and these short certificates? Does it mean anything? Or is practical experience better?
I think it's a combination of both. I think the going out and getting the certificates and taking the training, I mean, that shows a great will and drive, similar to someone that's going to do on the job training. But one of the things that's important is the demonstration of the want and the need to continuously learn, because IT security is not stagnant. It's constantly moving and changing and evolving, and so. Having someone that is not afraid of that and willing to keep up with that is a very important trait and quality that we look for.
When you look at your schedule for the next 3 months, I look at events. I go to events all the time. I go to the AWS event coming up. There's three or four events that I'm going to just in the next couple of weeks, because I sure try to read the tweets. I sure try to read stuff. And when I'm in the metro, I have a book with me and I try to read books, and I'm overwhelmed. And so are there organizations that you go to, AFSEA, Affirm, ACT, IACT? I mean, there's a whole long list. What events you go to? What events do you find value?
I find AFSEA quite valuable. You know, I find many of the vendor events quite valuable. So a lot of it is just whatever comes my way, or if someone recommends it and I have time for it, or it's cutting edge. Or it's in cutting edge. That's I probably shouldn't have thrown that out there, because it's sometimes untested, you know. But something that people are not thinking about right now, but is important and it can affect things. And so those are the types of things that I look for.
The reason I ask is because many times you say you're kind of a lurker on Twitter. I'm a lurker in many of these events, and I'll I'll use a different name, no. Or I'll tell people I'm Ray Gilray and I'm a retired guy and just trying to catch up. And sometimes I hear things that are kind of intriguing. You know, I was at an FC event a couple months back, maybe 6 weeks ago, and you know, it was on cybersecurity, and I sure got the impression that they were sitting back waiting for the next attack. I mean, it was coming, and they didn't know where it was going to be hit. And so I'm there. Is this a feeling you get? I mean, people just been attacked so many times. Okay, it's kind of, well, what are we going to do next? I mean, it's almost a reactive instead of being proactive.
I don't know if I'd necessarily call it that. I believe what we're seeing is regrouping events, you know, where, you know, people are thinking about where do our resources need to be placed, you know, based on the attempts and what are those gaps? You know, it's very difficult to defend against a threat that has no rules and clearly has the advantage of surprise. So, stressing yourself out as when and where it's going to happen is probably not the best way to apply your resources. So I really think what you're seeing is regrouping is, you know, what am I not thinking about right now? You know, what are you doing right now? I see a lot of, or I observe a lot of listening, you know, when I interact with my colleagues and they are talking about what keeps them up at night. And what they're seeing. And I collect that and I, you know, talk to another set of colleagues and put that together and then talk to another set of colleagues and sometimes may bring it back to the colleagues that I talked to before. And that.
So if you find a theme, it's worth pursuing then, huh?
Yes, it's you know, that's pretty much what's going on here.
You know, there are all kinds of resources out there in my world for listening and trying to keep up with threats and threat analysis and everything else. Are there any tools that you've... can recommend that maybe you've discovered here in the last few months have just popped on the radar that are worth investigating that maybe the listeners might want to take a look at?
Well, I'm not aware of a single solution of tools. I mean, that's the challenge of things is that there's such an expectation that that there's the one tool. So I'm very careful in promoting something because it's especially for our non-tech folks, the expectation will be that one tool will be the only thing that needs to be bought or invested in, and it will solve all of all problems. Yeah, and it becomes the IT person's or the IT security person's living nightmare, you know, for years to come and or months to come, because when they're unfortunately, you know, when something happens, then it's, well, you told me to get this. You said this was the best. Why did this happen? And it's like, well, that's not what they used, you know. So,
you know, you do some training, and I do some training as well. And I usually get 15 students in a classroom, and I can reach out and grab them, and they can grab me, and we kind of do some effective training that way. But if you have 280 locations, I mean, you have people coming and going constantly, and being retrained and deployed, and by the way, they move every 2 years. And so where's training fit in this? Is this, okay, it's 10 o'clock in the morning and training again. I mean, how do you do the training?
Well, we do the training in many ways. You know, we have, you know, online training. We have in-classroom training. You know, we have a program we call Tips of the Day where it sends out alerts and questions are asked to bring about awareness. You know, we also are planning on investing, or we are investing in tools to combat phishing. You know, that's one of the biggest vectors, you know, that's being used now. You know, click on this link here, or you want an iPad, or, you know, come see these funny cats dance. And so someone's going to click on that, and there goes the payload. So.
And the payload now is ransomware, isn't it?
Oh, yes. And of course, the value of the person pushing that out is high. So they're going to push it out as much as they can. So educating our users on those things, it's not just protection for our organization, for the department, for the government. It's also for themselves, because that can happen in their own lives, on their devices, on their computers at home. And who knows, maybe it'll hit the cars soon.
I'm a lot older than you, and when I think of getting my email, I'm still thinking of a screen and sitting at a desk and a keyboard and a mouse and all that stuff. But increasingly, you know, more people search Google with handheld devices than on desktops. So people like you would probably use a handheld device before they use a desktop for searching for something. That makes sense to me. Do you find that may be more vulnerable? I mean, if you're at a desktop and you have a little cup of coffee there and the world's nice and you've had some sleep and Zaire didn't blow up or something, and you see some phishing, but if you're on your phone, you're walking to the metro, you're doing this, doing that, look, it seems like you might be more vulnerable with a handheld device. What do you think?
Actually, I think it depends. You know, some people may. It depends on how you work. I think vulnerability is everywhere. There are definitely places that you're more vulnerable than the other. But the place where it's consistent is where folks believe you might be safer. So that's where I guess the mobile devices appear to give you the most security, because it's the same device across the board. You know, one iPhone, you know, or Android, or you know, whatever phone you have. You know, there's not too much flavor there, and people get the feeling of security because the updates are pushed out and you have limited access to control it. But still, I think either way you're vulnerable.
Well, an old guy like me says, for me, I think I'd be more impulsive about hitting on something, you know, with my thumb rather than in a comfortable little office listening to the Jupiter Symphony. So who knows? Everyone's going to be different. Let's take a break, come back, and we'll find more about your personal technology choices and try to look at what's going to happen in the future with the Internet of Things and mobile devices and security and insider threats. Oh, there's too many topics. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in the studio. Deborah Pierre-Lewis, Director IT Security, Policy Liaison and Training, Bureau of Information Resource Management, Department of State. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Deborah Pierre-Lewis, Director IT Security Policy, Liaison and Training, Bureau of Information Resource Management, Department of State. We've talked about some of the unique challenges that the Department of State has. Diverse workforce, time zones, changes, power going in and out, different countries. Debbie shows up for work at 9 o'clock and 10 things happen overnight she didn't expect, all kinds of different headaches there. You indicate that you follow folks on Twitter, and I do too. I think Twitter's increasingly where journalists go to see trends and see what's going on. And it's lighthearted, and this is what I had for breakfast, and Debbie's over here, look at her, she's on the bicycle, and a lot of silly things, but kind of interesting things too. So who do you follow on Twitter? And I guess the State Department has a Twitter handle too, is that right?
Yes, the State Department does have a Twitter handle, and I follow them.
So, you better.
Yes, I do. So, yes, I follow the State Department. I follow, is it okay to say Washington Post?
Sure, yeah. guy who used to write for Washington Post is Krebs. Krebs on security. That's a good one to follow, too.
So, yes. Well, yes, and I actually do. And so, I follow probably too much to mention.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I follow a lot.
Mm-hmm. And you can start following at Ray Gilray. That's my interesting tweet.
You will see me. Okay. You will definitely see me.
Well, I'll actually see you on my Twitter because that's officially going to see you.
Well, yes. You'll see me on your Twitter.
I go to events all the time and people come up to me and they go, "Hey, I heard that Debbie on the air. She sounds real smart. Now, what kind of phone does she have?" I said, "Look, she's got experience all these agencies. She's real good at this. She's this. No, but what kind of phone does she have?" Well, it's like who's your favorite baseball player? So what I've come up with is a scientific 10-question test to find out if you, in fact, are a card-carrying nerd. And so I'm going to give you this test, Debbie, and we'll see how nerdy you really are. We'll see if you do have a background in computer science or not. Okay.
Only if you did Star Wars or Star Trek, I would pass.
Do you have an Instagram account?
I do.
How many cell phones have you purchased for yourself in the last year?
Two.
Not bad. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I lurk.
Oh, because you're bugging. Okay. Do you have a Snapchat account?
I do not.
Okay.
I do not.
And what kind of smartphone do you have?
iOS, iPhone.
iPhone, okay. And what's the most popular app on that bad boy here in the last 30 days, let's say?
Realtor.com, actually, for me.
Important for you, yeah. So we break into your new home, and how many tablet devices do you see floating around there?
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. Kindles. Two Kindles.
Plurals.
Yeah,
wow.
Kindles, two iPads.
Four.
Mix it up. Yeah,
That's not too shabby. Yeah. And when was your most recent post in social networking?
Oh, I think I may have said happy birthday to someone. I'm not a big poster. It's so much. And that was even dangerous because you miss one. You just miss one.
Right. You know. I don't see any. When's your Apple Watch, dude? Did you order one? The $17,000 one?
No. I'm not I'm actually not a watch wearer.
You're not a watch
wearer. I'm not a watch
wearer. But if you were, you'd definitely order one, huh?
I definitely would. Those are some snazzy things there.
Finally, last book you read was electronic or paper?
It was paper.
Paper.
I like the feel of the books, even though I do enjoy the Amazon free book. you know, every month. That's awesome.
I would say it's pretty respectable. I'd probably give you the mid-range for being a nerd, but you really got to have mid-range. Like impulsively buy phones every 4 months. That's really a sign of a nerd. And just constantly social network updates and
yes.
And this paper and nerds.
I have
a book in my bag right over there. So I'm
and
a
I have
big
one
believer.
Too. Yeah, so I'm not representing quite well, so yeah, I feel a little bad.
Because if I get stuck somewhere at a dentist office or somewhere, guess what? I pull out the book and I read it because if for some reason visually my mind reacts to that tactile sense, maybe it's old-fashioned, or maybe it's who knows what it is. But instead of looking at old-fashioned things, I want to look at new-fashioned things and new-school things. So, crystal ball, let me grab the crystal ball here. This used to be a studio for basketball games. Oh. Had a crystal ball in here, really, and someone threw it and broke it. So they don't have it anymore. So I'll give you a figurative crystal ball. So we're looking in the future of the State Department. We have IoT. We have mobile devices. We have, you know, insider threats. We have encryption. I mean, so what's going to happen 4 or 5 years down the road? Is there going to be resolved? More of the same? New changes? By the way, new administration coming in here in a few months. And that's going to, in addition to all your people changing every 2 years, 280 people, and then a whole new administration. So what do you see happening with the State Department security in the next few years?
Well, one of the things that's constant with the State Department is its investment in its people. And what I see changing, or not changing, but in improving even more is the investment in the people, what that means and what that entails. What that'll mean, and we're starting to see it a little bit more, and the discussion is there, is that shift of the technology of what people should be looking at. It's not all machine-based, and that's one thing I'm impressed is that, you know, we're talking about it. We're saying that the machine can't catch everything. You know, what are the people that we need that are gonna look at that data? In addition, on the other side of it, from our senior levels, you know, what information do we need to show them that they can make those the best decisions, as we like to call risk? And so that's what I see, educating and education for our users on risk, as well as how to manage and deal with a lot of data.
And so you see, it's more of a human-based approach. I mean, take advantage of what tools are out there. Take advantage of as many automated processes as you can, but use it judiciously with maybe some analytical ability put in by regular human beings that maybe can see beyond the checklist items.
Yes, very similar to what we already have going. And I don't mean we as in the State Department, but just in general in the government, you know, the intelligence community. Where there's intelligence analysts that take all of this disparate information and provide a threat picture. So we need to develop that same cadre when it comes to information technology. They'll look at all of this data and come up with a threat picture and push that out, as well as our leaders becoming. They're already more savvy, you know, with the technology. You know, everyone's carrying an iPhone, a Droid. They're carrying something, you know, that brings them closer to where they've been in technology, you know, than they were maybe 10, 15 years ago. So developing that risk understanding, you know, is something that I also see happening.
Health IT professionals are wary of medical devices that are internet-enabled because it can be another attack vector, mm-hmm. threat landscape. Where do you see the role of IoT and Department of State, and would that fit in any of your plans? You consider, is it something that's really not even on your horizon?
Oh, it's definitely on our horizon, and I think that that fits into the risk understanding. It's, you know, we're going to keep moving forward with technology, but it's you know, how far do we go and how do we protect it? I think is the question here, as well as how do we react when something does happen? What are the risks that we're willing to take? And I think that's the discussions that's happening, not just at the State Department, but across the federal landscape.
So because people are remote, they may not be able to update their handheld devices as quickly as others. Has that been the case, or is that just something that I'm just implying that because of people being in rural areas, or do people in the State Department can update as easily as they can in Nebraska as in Japan?
I would say that State Department's obviously been doing this for a very long time. So it goes back to scheduling. I mean, just because you can't update the same time everyone else can't, doesn't mean it cannot be scheduled at another time. And so that goes back to the adjustment, the thinking outside of the box, the process and the capability set that our cadre demonstrates as a whole.
So when you look at greenfield projects, brand new projects that come online, are there ways to bake in security or have what Tony Scott would call a secure by design, not tacked on? He talks about the 64 Mustang and putting airbags on something like that. Is this approach you have, or where does it fit in with your approach?
That's absolutely it. It's are we buying cars without seat belts now? that's where we need to be in technology as we develop, as we deploy, as our vendors come to us with products. The security has to be included. It's no longer a situation of, buy our new fancy shiny object. And when we say, well, we've got these security controls that must be added, now vendors can't say, oh, that's a thing of the past. We're not gonna secure it. That's not important to us. This is important. This is, what we're giving you. If you want to stay in the game, you've got to buy this. And now it's here's this shiny object and we've baked security in it and you don't have to worry about that. And that's definitely where we are.
And I think that's a dance that you've seen many times. I keep thinking of greenfield projects and people charging for maintenance. And no, it should be part of the process before you ever buy it. I mean, when I married my wife 33 years ago, she had a Subaru, and there was a little box on the dashboard to put in an air conditioner if you wanted to put one down the road.
Yes.
We look at it now, and my kids laugh, and they think it's hilarious. But some people think that way, So now it's, no, it's not, we're going to have it. You're going to get the car with the air conditioning built in.
Yes.
And you're going to have that little screen so you can back up and hit any little kids pulling out of your driveway instead of, we're going to add that on later. I think the whole baked in versus not baked in. I think secure by design is a concept that I think vendors have to start thinking. I think people like you think because of the multiple changes and the wide range of applications you have to worry about in your world.
Yes, and we're there, and I'm glad Tony Scott's talking about that. It's very important. So
next 10 seconds, give me the next two events you'll be at in the next 6 months.
Oh my goodness.
Just tell me what someone like, people want to say, now what kind of events does she go to? What does she read? Would you go to the big RSA conference they have every year or local events?
Actually, I just received the email for that. So yes. So definitely plan on being there.
Hmm. Someone like you may go up to the RSA. Oh, I'm with Debbie's Donuts. Oh, really? Because someone like you must have to do that. Because
I'm going to say I'm John Gilroy.
Oh, you're John Gilroy.
I'm John Gilroy.
They'll be stunned because, wow, he's not very smart at all. You're a fooler. But I think it's interesting. Someone in your position, security, State Department, you may have to go to these security events. A lot of people leave their phones up in their hotel room because they don't want to be attacked at the conference, because that's the target-rich environment, I would think. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Deborah Pierre-Louis. She's the Director of IT Security Policy, Liaison and Training, Bureau of Information Resource Management, the Department of State. Thanks, Debbie.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.